before we get to the podcast, I wanted to invite you to the Pipeline Conference. The theme of this year's conference will be succession at every level. The event will be held October 11 through 13 here in Nashville, Tennessee. The focus of this event will be succession all the way from senior leadership at a church to the preschool and even the parking volunteers. That means that this conference is for your whole leadership team and any volunteers who you'd like to join you. Our speakers will include John Piper, Bob Russell, H.B. Charles, Tom Rayner, and more. Again, this event is October 11 through 13 here in Nashville. We will have separate coaching days on October 11 and 13, with the main event being the 12th. These days provide your team a chance to get focused, engaged training from our team. We have early bird discounts running through July 31st, so there's still time to take advantage of these, along with our fantastic group rates if you want to bring your team. Go to myleadershippipeline.com to learn more about the event and to register your team. Again, that's myleadershippipeline.com, and don't forget to take advantage of our early bird and group discounts before July 31st.
Hey, welcome to the 5LQ podcast. My name is Daniel Im, the Director of Church Multiplication at Lifeway, and I'm here with Todd Adkins, the Director of Leadership at Lifeway. And we are pleased to be with Jen Wilkin.
Very pleased.
Now, Jen is a wife, a mom to four great kids. I'm looking at your bio on your website. You are an advocate for women to love God in their minds through the faithful study of the Word. She is an author of a few different books and curriculums. And another one is actually coming up in a few months on Genesis. Right. Now, she is at the Village Church and with the Village Church Institute over both men and women and overseeing that area as well. So, man, Jen, we are so pleased to have you with us on the podcast today.
Thanks for having me on.
Yes. Well, it's been a long time coming. I know that we originally asked you to be on the podcast like literally a year ago. And it has been fits and starts and since then. And even we had to like reboot today in this conversation. Yeah. So I'm very much looking forward to it. Tell us a little bit more about yourself.
I do have four kiddos. There's only one left at home, which is pretty heartbreaking. There are three of mine that are down in college right now. They're actually together down at Texas A&M.
Oh, awesome.
And then my youngest, Calvin, is a junior in high school, and I'm married to Jeff. We've been married almost 24 years, and he's great. He serves in children's ministry in the church, so all the kids know who he is and think he's a rock star. And I serve at the Village Church. Most recently, I'd say in the last 18 months is when I've taken on a role at the Village doing what I do. And prior to that, I was leading in a parachurch context, leading a women's community Bible study in the area.
Good deal.
That's awesome.
Well, the first question we always start with is, who are you currently learning from?
Okay, so I know there are probably some answers to this that would sound a little more spiritual, like I should say,
Jesus.
This is a good one, right? Yeah. Pastor. And of course I'm learning from them.
Matt Chandler.
Yeah. Matt Chandler. And absolutely. But I was thinking about this, and I really, the people who I think I'm paying the most attention to right now are my aging parents. Hmm. I have been trying to listen hard to the lessons that they have learned. And as they are, you know, losing the ability to do things that they could do when they were younger. Like my mom has multiple sclerosis. And so every time I'm out on a hike with my family, I think this is something my mom can't do anymore. So I should really enjoy this and recognize it for the gift that it is. But then other things like, my dad was noticing, you know, that this is a really busy time of life for me. And he said, yeah, I remember that. I remember how, when I was your age, how busy things were. And he said, I wish I had taken more of an opportunity to slow down. And so I think, okay, I want to pay attention to that. I want to be someone who's going to age well, but also someone who's paying attention to sort of the signposts that are happening at this particular stage of life.
Yeah. I love that because as I've gotten older and my parents have gotten older, it's
dude, neat you're like to see 30.
Well, it's neat to see the relationship between my parents and I, right? To say, hey, it's not just a matter of talking or giving an update, but actually being able to share stories and hear their opinions on different things. And it's neat to see how that relationship evolves.
Yeah.
Do you ever make the mistake?
Not everybody has a good relationship with their parents too. I've been thinking what a gift it is, even that we can have these conversations and that I know they're a trusted source of wisdom. And so I've just been reminding myself I need to avail myself of that more often and just really appreciate what we have.
Do you ever accidentally tell on yourself? I mean, you know, when you're having...
That's always fun. Older stories from when you're younger.
Yeah, they're like, wait a second. Wait a second. Or worse, I come from a really, really small town, rural area. I mean, there was one stoplight in the county, not in the town. So everybody knows everybody. And you know, occasionally someone will tell my parents a story about me.
Yeah.
And then so they then say, hey, I was talking to somebody the other day and they said you did this. Did you do that? Yes, but I was like 17. Come on.
Well, here's the weird part I'm at now is I'm thinking, oh, my kids are doing that stuff right now, the stuff that I don't know about and I'll hear about when I am older.
It's true. No, I'm sure your kids are great.
My kids are perfect. I mean, I'm sure other people's kids.
Yeah, other people's kids. Yeah, for sure. So so you're learning from your parents. Are there any books? Are there any other sources of learning that you have right now that you would just say, hey, this is something good that I'm picking up a lot from and I'd like to share it?
Yeah, I mean, this is an old standby for me. Well, there's two, actually. I wrote a book recently on the attributes, on the incommunicable attributes of God, which put me back into a couple of my favorite books. And then I'm now writing a follow-up on the communicable attributes. And so I'm getting to still spend a lot of time with two of my favorite people, and that's A.W. Tozier, Knowledge of the Holy. Mm. And then Arthur Pink, The Attributes of God, which is pretty succinct, not very snuggly, but really helpful. And so every time I go back and read these books that I have read, I mean, probably 5 or 6 times now, I read things that I have forgotten or that I missed the last time through, and just continue. Those books, those are two books that continually bring me back to a place of worship.
Hmm. Yeah, Tozer is one of my favorites for tweetables.
Yeah. Well, and everything else, pursuit of like everything that he completely is just amazing. And honestly, you know, it's we are in a bad place if we don't go back to, in my opinion, if we don't go back to the books that wrecked us earlier and reread, because you know it is that whole idea of coming back to that and learning it deeper and deeper still. And yes, we want to do that with scripture. Absolutely. Right. But we also, I think, you know, it's not just about what you read. It's about what you reread, and what you reread says as much about you as what you read.
Yeah, it's true. Now, you were sharing earlier about your relationship with your parents and the wisdom that you've been able to grow from and learn from, and how not everyone has that relationship with their parents. But, you know, regardless, we can actually learn wisdom and anti-wisdom from our parents, right? Regardless of where they're at. And
did you say anti-wisdom?
Yeah, anti-wisdom, definitely. Okay. So, you know, on that point. No, I just made it up right now. Okay. I don't even know what's real. But in light of that fact, right? I mean, we all learn from obstacles, right? We all go through obstacles, but we have that opportunity to learn from them. So what are some of the obstacles that you're facing today?
With regard to leadership in particular. So I would say that for the last 5 to 10 years, I have been waging what has felt like an uphill battle to bring back to the church something that has recently fallen by the wayside. Particularly as someone who's ministering in the Bible Belt, I have seen that within the local church there has been a sense that our people know the Bible when in fact they don't. And as someone who was teaching women's Bible classes and trying to get women just into the texting to give them firsthand knowledge of the text, I began to realize that there was biblical illiteracy at every level. there were women who had been in church. I mean, the most common email that I get these days is from women who will say, I've been in the church my whole life, and I've done women's Bible study for 30 years, and no one has taught me how to study it. Like, I'm this for the first time. And really what I'm asking of the women who are in my classes, and now as I have oversight for the men's classes as well at the Village, is that they would apply basic comprehension skills that they learned in their high school English class to the text. And what has become the norm for many in the church is that they will sit under teaching over a passage of scripture that they have spent no time in themselves prior to hearing the teaching. So when that's the case, we are always taking someone else's word for it. We are not thinking critically about the text ourselves. And so my biggest obstacle, I think, particularly because I'm dealing with women, has been to say that the great commandment is that we would love God with heart, soul, mind, and strength, and that women and men are intellectual beings and given the capacity to love God with their minds, and that faith is more than a feeling. And in fact, as we move into a, you know, distinctly post-Christian culture, I guess, here in the United States, it's going to be increasingly important that we have a faith grounded in the fact of who God proclaims himself to be, and not merely in a feeling.
Yeah, I love that, because part of it is, and as I've pastored in Canada, and especially Montreal, which is very post-Christian.
Yeah.
When you think about that, and understanding the importance of knowing the essentials of the faith and being able to defend and articulate that, all of a sudden, some of those peripheral issues within a Bible belt, hey, let's look at these obscure passages and try to figure, all of a sudden those things kind of fade away, and you're like, hey, okay, can I defend the resurrection, right? Can I defend just the basic things that we should all be doing, rather than Bible trivia questions. Who's the oldest who's ever lived in the Bible?
Yeah. But I mean, you'd be amazed how few people can answer that. You know, I mean, it's one thing to be able to defend the resurrection. It's another thing to even actually know what the resurrection account is in the scriptures. That is missing. And so I would love for us to move on to a place where we're comfortable in our apologetic. But I find that most people are only comfortable repeating what they've heard someone else say. And so that's not a great place to come from if you are, before you can be an apologist for your faith, it needs to be deeply grounded in you. And I think it's interesting. The church has shifted, at least where I am, over the last 15 or 20 years away from some of the traditional models that had been in place, with like a Sunday school model or something like that. And we've put a big emphasis on the small group, which is great. I mean, it helps you build community, and it helps you, we obviously need that. We need to be in deep relationship with one another. But the small group, a pure groups model, where you basically say we're going to do small groups and then we're going to have weekend services, is a difficult format to have any kind of systematic place where you are learning the scriptures. Yeah. You typically don't have a thought level discussion around the text when in those groups. You have a feelings level discussion. And I would say not only that, but those are typically mixed gendered environments. And so women are, just from a sociological standpoint, we see that women tend to enter into mixed gender dialogue at a less frequent level than men do, and also tend to express feelings versus thoughts. So that's another thing I've really been pushing for, is to reclaim environments that are dedicated to the purpose of learning. I'm not worried that women are going to build community. We can do that in our sleep. I need a place where we're pushing them on the thing that's harder for them, which is we're going to have a thought level discussion around the text, where you're allowed to speculate and you're allowed to be wrong and you're allowed to disagree with one another without there being any kind of social penalty associated with.
Yeah, that's good.
Women don't interject, those kinds of ideas. So that's a big thing that I'm pushing for as well.
One other thing I think that is, that actually brought me to Lifeway, frankly, was the upbringing I had, where we did have the Sunday school model and training union and, these different programs.
Yeah.
But it wasn't the program. It was the scope and a sequence. It was giving people a map, not a menu. And so you know, whenever it was 30 years ago when church practice began to move away from maps to menus to saying, hey, here's a scope and a sequence. Here's the basic understanding of discipleship right. to choose your own adventure, do whatever's right in your own mind. We lost a lot of health and maturity and literacy. And so I don't know. I would say, so even if you look at leadership development, which is what we're focused on and what we do, it's not saying we're moving people from character to competency. It's saying, no, we're really trying to, or even advance discipleship. It's really saying, no, those things are mixed and mingled, and discipleship and development are two sides of the same coin,
right?
Because we are his workmanship. And so how else are we going to do that if we don't have a systematic way of discipling people, but also at least a systematic way of developing individual people as well? And so, you know, because you can't grow into spiritual maturity apart from using your gifts in service to Christ.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That's a good word.
And going back further to what we were talking about with truth. So truth is big in the news right now. Is truth dead was, you know, the most recent cover at this time of recording. Is a recent cover on the front of Time.
Mm-hmm.
Speak to that a little bit, if you will. What do you think about that statement, or what do you see in our society? How is that? How are you trying to address that with what you're doing with biblical literacy?
Gosh, Todd, why don't you ask me a hard question? yeah, I think that we're seeing sort of some of the ridiculousness of live your truth. If everybody's living their own truth, you know, we're all going to be constantly in conflict with one another, which I think if you've spent any time out on Twitter, that's what you see, and that's what you see on Facebook. And we all think that if we just shout our truth louder than the next person, it's going to convince someone. And but we just become more firmly entrenched in our own positions. And so the beauty of returning the church to a place where the scriptures are our reference point is to give them an objective truth that is outside of their own experience, their own limited experience, or their own limited set of perceptions, and say, I know that you feel that this is true, but here is what the scriptures are saying are true about the God of the universe. And then correlated to that is what they say is true about you. And I think that what those within the church will come to a clearer recognition of when they place themselves under the living and active word is that they can trust it, first of all. I mean, that's the thing that I keep going back to, is I can have the most convincing apologetic when I'm sitting across from an unbeliever in terms of, like, you know, here's where the scriptures say this and here's how it all mm-hmm. fits together. But ultimately, if I don't believe deeply and on a firsthand level that the most accurate description of my sin, my brokenness is found in the scriptures, and the most compelling solution is presented there, then I am just going to be blown about by whatever else is out there in the news. So it's important for us to keep affirming the inerrancy of scripture. I think that's the thing that's probably been under attack the most, at least in the places that I've been most recently, is just that, you know, well, this is someone's opinion, or it's been edited over time. And all of those things are good things for us to address with our people. But people are most reassured about those issues when they are able to see the cohesiveness of the Bible, when they're able to know firsthand, oh, what someone said was a contradiction is not a contradiction. All those kinds of things need to be answered at a personal level.
All right, let's move to question three. So this is a kind of a new one. If you haven't listened for a while, this is, we switched out question three. I know after 150 episodes, you were used to question three, but it's different now. So Jen, because it's been a long, this may be new for you, since we originally scheduled it. So this may be out of left field, but what are two or three things that you have to do every day, in order to lead well? So Other than read scripture, obviously.
Other than pray and read the Bible.
Other than spiritual disciplines, what are a couple of things that you need to do every day?
I have to remind myself to be tender toward the weaknesses of those for whom I'm leading. And then I have to remind myself to be tough toward my own hurts. So I want to be vulnerable toward those. I don't want ministry to be about teaching the Bible. You know, it has to be about teaching the Bible to women who are living in difficult situations and dealing with deep and real hurts. There has to be an empathy that's maintained there. And so I always want to remind myself, like in any meeting that I'm sitting in any planning that we're doing, that it's a privilege to be in that room and that I'm there on behalf of other people. And they are people who are dealing with very real hurts and struggles. So there's that. And then the other piece of it is that from a personal standpoint, I cannot afford to get knocked down and not get up again quickly. I need to not take critique as a personal attack. I need to not take a loss as an indictment on my ability to lead. I have to get up off the mat faster when I'm knocked down. So I try to remind myself of that because, you know, the more my platform, for lack of a better term, has grown, the more scrutiny I come under, the more comfortable people are offering critique.
And yes, this is
that's
true.
A nice way of putting
yeah.
it.
Yeah. And what's interesting, it's kind of changed. When I was kind of new on the scene, it was like every first year seminary student wanted to tell me that my hermeneutic was wrong. But now they've kind of all backed off and, you know, it's other people who are like, oh, there's a new person to take a shot at. And it's okay. I mean, that's part of it, right? And that's the other thing that I have to remind myself of is that the louder your voice gets, the more critics you're going to draw and you need to be okay
right.
with it.
You're right.
Like there's always a cost to ministry. And if that is the cost associated with the ministry that the Lord has given me, then I need to be willing to pay it and not be a big whiner about it. So
yeah, especially as you say, hey, no, this is what the Bible says. Right.
Yeah.
Not what we want it to say, but no, this is what it says.
Yeah. I'm like, this is not a gray issue.
Yeah.
When did this become a gray issue?
Yeah. And then that's, you're right. People, we like to call them trolls.
Or, yes.
Don't feed the trolls.
I'm being trolled right now for saying we need to build an army, not an audience. And so I've got a bunch of people on Twitter that are up in arms that the church is arming itself against blah, blah, blah. And I thought you were supposed to love your neighbor. Yes. If you actually listened or linked to what I just said, you would see that I'm trying to not allow people to compartmentalize their life and just come to church, but actually love their community and be in it.
That's what you meant the whole time?
Yeah. Sorry, Daniel.
Well, that's good. So imagine then, you know, what you're describing is illustrative of the fact that we don't just have a Bible literacy issue. We have a literacy
issue. Yeah. And people, I don't know if you've noticed this, but I've just increasingly the number of people who'll respond to what you're saying, but they didn't actually hear what you just said.
Yeah.
Like, you're like, no, did you even... Were your ears even open or were you texting or whatnot? Because that is not what I'm talking about.
Right. But, you know, going back to the thing I was saying earlier, they respond that way from some hurt. Right. Mm, I mean, that's a woundedness thing there. Oh, and so as much as I want to go, you're a troll and I want your account to be suspended, I also realize there's a reason someone responds that way to what I've written. And so I try to just remember, OK, don't hate the trolls. Trolls are operating from a really weird place and keep moving. Like, don't.
They're under bridges. Billy goats are waking them up all night.
Really weird. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I try to remind myself of that the only time someone's going to respond like that is when they're coming from a place of deep hurt. Like some of the most off base things that have been said about me, I know they're coming from a sense of not having been heard somewhere else. And, you know, the internet's such a weird place because everybody has a platform, and it takes 10 seconds to put something out there. And so like some people have earned credibility over time, and that's why they have a platform. But then you just got your rando person who's like, I can shout louder than that, and I'll say whatever I want. And I can't give that person any emotional capital, because my ministry and my purpose is bigger than that.
Yeah.
And
I love this tweet by one of our friends, Devin, here at Lifeway. He said, some books should be blog posts, some blog posts should be tweets, and some tweets should remain thoughts.
That's good.
Yeah. Referring to the trolls, not your work, Dan. We love your work.
Not me. Right. Not me. Right.
Yeah. The trolls. Now, our next question here is about leadership in the home. And this is great, because you said you have three kids at Texas A&M and yeah, one at home. And so as you're going through that transition and with your husband, I mean, what does leadership look like in your home?
Well, we've hit the phase of parenting where we're consulting instead of setting out a bunch of rules. And I love it, but it also feels like, oh, I still want to force you to do stuff sometimes. So it's hard to, I know my bio says I have four great kids, but I do actually have four great kids. I mean, they're responsible and they're contributors and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, every now and then they'll say, I think I'm going to do this, or I missed that deadline again. And you just want to go, I should have sent him an email telling him to turn it in, and get past that stage. And so I'm learning so much. I'd say Jeff and I, we were talking about this just the other night, where I'm learning so much about my own tendency to control and to want to be the sovereign ruler of the universe that is my children's lives. And it's a really interesting time, but also really rewarding when they show that they're capable. You know, and you realize, oh my gosh, these are small adults. And we've also been enjoying having older children. Like we haven't had like a phase where we wanted to sell them to the gypsies. It's all been pretty enjoyable.
That's good to hear. I have a 7, 6, and 2-year-old. So,
but we just took a vacation over spring break where we were all together, and it got to be about 2 o'clock in the afternoon each day. And one of the kids would say, where can we get a really good cup of black coffee right now? And I'm like, this is the best. My adult children and I are sitting drinking coffee together in the afternoon, enjoying being grown up. We're getting to the place where we get to enjoy friendship with them. Yeah. In a way that you just can't when they're two and they're trying to kill themselves all day long.
That's good. Every morning when my kids are eating breakfast, I'm making my French press, you know, grinding beans, making my French press. And my kids, they're both like, oh, when can we start drinking coffee? When can we start drinking coffee? My girls, 7 and 5. So what happened, actually 7 and 6. So what happened was, a couple weeks ago on Sunday morning, I have a Yeti, like a Yeti mug, and there's sometimes they don't have good lids, right? Like, I mean, there's a little open spout. So there's a bit of coffee on there, and then a little bit of it spilt on my daughter's head. Now, it wasn't hot. Okay. I'm not a bad parent. It's just that little top part. So it was cool. But it went on her head, and I was like, oh no, I spilled coffee on my daughter. And she was smiling. She was like, no, it's okay. It didn't. It's all fine. I actually tasted some. And I was like, really? You tasted coffee? I was like, what did you think? She's like, it smells better than it tastes. I'm okay waiting.
Yeah, there were a few things I was worried about with the kids, you know, more than I should have been. And one was that they wouldn't become coffee drinkers, or that they might want to put cream and sugar in it, which is
here. You can't do that.
Mainly because I'm just too lazy to keep it stocked. And then
it takes away all the nutritional value of the coffee. It does. Hey, you know, a black cup of coffee is like 1 or 2 calories.
Bean soup. It's healthy.
Yeah, you put creamer and all that other junk in it. It's like a 200-calorie drink.
For some strange reason, last year I turned 40. And before that, it was like I was a cardboard, you know, kind of guy. I mean, you know, you turn your coffee from black into cardboard before you drink it. That's the color, right? And I don't know. I just stopped liking it and started liking black. Yeah. I was like, I'm finally a grown up.
Well, black coffee, if the beans have to be good for black coffee.
It is true.
You can't drink Folgers or Maxwell Health black.
No.
If you could tell your 20-year-old self about preparing to lead. Did you like that segue?
That was so good.
Yeah. What would you tell your 20-year-old self about preparing to lead? Since you have some youngins that you're now consulting with, I would say that you've thought about that quite a bit.
Yeah, I have. I would say 20-year-old me needed to know this isn't about you. Like, I would have said that at 20, but I know it in a way now that I didn't then. So I just would need, I need a sharp reminder, 20-year-old me, that it's not about me, that it's not about me doing awesome in some role in ministry. It's not me, you know, having a voice for women so that I can be awesome. It's about the people who you're serving. And I know that sounds kind of like that pray and read your Bible answer, but it's absolutely true that you have to keep reminding yourself, the more you make this about you, the more you are unable to build something that outlives you. And the less that you're going to be raising up other people to lead alongside of you. And to, you know, hand it over to at the point that it's no longer yours to hold on to. And so I needed to know that. And then I think the other thing, particularly as a woman in ministry, because women in ministry, and I would say women who work in general, meet a lot of times with the question of, well, have you weighed the cost of what it is to do this in addition to your family? And so what 20-year-old me probably also needed to hear, there is absolutely always a cost for ministry, but doesn't mean that it isn't worth paying. And so we had to navigate that, you know, with the, I've been in ministry since my kids were small, and Jeff and I have a really great marriage. We really like each other. Like, don't come to me for marriage advice, because we just haven't had a hard marriage. We just like each other and we partner really well with each other. And he was always saying, go do your thing and I'll manage, you know, the kids while you're gone. And so was there a cost to me going and doing a retreat across town or somewhere else when the kids were little? Yes, absolutely. The question is, was it worth it? And the answer is, yeah. You know, I'm the mom and I also have a teaching gift that is to be utilized for the good of the church. And those things are not in opposition to one another. In fact, I would be a different kind of mom if I were not using that gift the way that it is intended to be used. And so,
yeah, you're right. Because as we operate in our giftedness and have opportunities to exercise that, I mean, there's that sense of fulfillment, right? In saying, hey, this is what the Lord has uniquely gifted you to do. And when we have that, right, and we're able to share that gift with others, then I mean that actually translates to the way that we relate with our kids, with our spouses, with others, versus kind of being stored up and being like, hey, I can't really use this anywhere. And I mean that comes out in other ways, right?
Yeah. I think, you know, and I think for women in particular who are in leadership, for men, we can more easily reach a place of saying that a man can have a dual calling or multiple calling. But for women, we don't always give them the benefit of the doubt that they can navigate that according to their conscience. And so I think I've just learned over the last 20 years that if my family is in a good place with it, then that's my reference point. And I don't need to be concerned about someone looking and saying, oh, why are you doing that? You know, is that your kids are going to pay a price for that? And I would argue that as a family, we gained at least as much or more than it cost. My children learned that they were partnering with me in ministry if they kept the house clean and did their homework and managed all their stuff while I was out doing whatever it was that was being required of me from a ministry standpoint. And obviously, you know, you're always being sensitive to the balances between your family and your other commitments. But I would say that's true whether you're a man or a woman.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Love that. Love that. Well, thanks, Jen, so much for being with us. She is Jen Wilkin. You can find her at jenwilkin.net. We'll have her other links and other resources to her books and her study guides in the show notes. But thank you so much for being with us, Jen.
Thanks, guys. It was great to be on.
Thank you for listening to the 5 Leadership Questions podcast. Don't forget to visit myleadershippipeline.com to learn more about our fall conference, October 11 through 13 here in Nashville, and to take advantage of our early bird and group discounts. Again, that's myleadershippipeline.com, and the early bird deadline is July 31st, so move quickly to take advantage of these discounts.